Blog Talk Radio.
from the House of Representatives threatened a lawsuit. I haven't followed up on that to see if he's indeed. Sign to enact law, which they feel either not necessary by the Congress, or they feel the such contention with the standing Congress, the House and the Senate, that they felt they had no choice. So I guess in some cases, Obama feels no different today, even though those may differ. This is the anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, 1964, signed by Lyndon Johnson. And I remind those, discussion, the point I had to bring out to some people about this perceived over had a very contentious relationship with the Congress, this Congress, the Democratic Congress. And the fact that I was just looking at a YouTube clip, an interview with President Kennedy, 2 years into his presidency, 2 years into his presidency, and first in the House and then the Senate, because there's so many. I guess at the time, maybe 400-plus members of the House of Representatives and, of course, 100 senators. But it seemed to him that the power of the Congress is relatively spread out and muted, you know, spread out, you know, to all the members. Once he became President of the United States, he saw the Congress as one big body, which he had to contend in order to get legislation passed. So, again, a lot of it is deception. For one station, he saw himself as a fish in a large pond. On the other side, he saw a whale coming at him. A few minutes, because he's here waiting, and patiently waiting, and glad he's waiting. Not giving up on me. So you want to talk about one last thing about the 54th Civil Rights Act, and I also want to remind that since the creation of the Republic, the 54th Civil Rights Act is the third Civil Rights Act that was passed. Okay, the first one in 1866, the second in 1957, and the last one, you know, who's there acknowledging, you know, the 50th anniversary, is the 54th Civil Rights Act. 50 years, am I that old? Gracious. And also, I just want to remind that this is the month of Ramadan. This is our first show in this month, this blessed month, the month in which the Holy Quran was revealed, and the month which has a commemoration and acknowledgement of Muslims around the world who are able to fast for a period of 30 days. Taking light meal in the morning and eating a main meal in the evening. So between during the daylight hours, abstaining from food and drink and relations with our spouses. It's a spouse, husband and wife. Man has a wife, woman has a husband. So I've said enough on my own, so I'm going to bring on Bianchi, who's been waiting here. What's going on, Bianchi? Can't do his thing. What's going on? You there, Bianchi? I hear him.
Your intro wasn't even heard, so what was going on with your telephone?
Oh, really? Okay, well, it could either be the telephone or it could be this software here. you know, either way. But how you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. After I listened to all your cousins burn up their money last night.
Oh, what are you referring to? This is the whole July 4th thing, or just what in general?
Yeah, they just lit their money up and watched it go up in the sky and pop.
Well, yeah, well, I guess if you have it like that, you can do it. You can afford it. I know. Years ago, New York City was much different, and it was customary that people would go into Chinatown and buy fireworks and bottle rockets and M80s. Ash cans and pineapples, blockbusters. Man, it was like a war zone in the street. Boom, 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 boom. And I understand that it was always illegal. Fireworks were never legal in New York City. Firecrackers. So it was never enforced. But when Giuliani became the mayor, one of the things he did was enforce the law. So it's rare to hear, even though yesterday we heard a few smugglers of firecrackers, I have to be honest with you, I hadn't heard in years. But outside of the fireworks, the official fireworks displays, which is done by a licensed, authorized entity, just don't, hear so much as you used to. Even back then, every year, people were injured from the fireworks, firecrackers. I don't know how I survived sometimes getting M80 thrown at me and asking, oh, my goodness, man, these guys were, oh, my goodness, blockbusters thrown at you. What do they say? An M80 is like a small stick of dynamite? Blockbusters are a quarter of a dynamite? How did I make it through all that? So a few things on the table here, Bianchi. Some of these Supreme Court decisions, including the Hobby Lobby, which was a very high anticipated case. I would say of all the decisions, this is the one that's received the most attention, which in essence centers around Obamacare and religious liberty, the right of a entity, a firm, based on religiosity. Religious belief should be held. In this case, can refuse to cover and pay for contraceptive devices or abortive devices. And what I think is significant here, you hear some of the hand wringing over this. Where women are saying, well, the corporation has no right to, intrude into my body, to my business. Well, if you ask them to pay for it, then that's what they've done. On one hand, he wants them to pay for this. And I think about that woman, Sandra Fluke. Yes, Sandra Fluke. The one who testified before, I think, the House, that the taxpayer should pay for her contraception. As far as I know, she was not married, but she spoke to her husband. she had a boyfriend and a boyfriend. So, and by the way, she was one of the speakers at the Democratic National Convention. Again, this war, I want to get close to the people. When I'm told that I need to give so-and-so credit to Obama. So this is part of his agenda. This is he who he is. So let me just remind, after Ramadan, I'm taking a much more laid-back posture this month. So I'm not going to be so fired up as I have in the past. But go on, you were saying, were you going to say something, Bianchi?
Well, I was going to, add on to you talking about the Civil Rights Act. Actually, through 1968,
right,
there's been eight of them. Eight of them throughout the history of the United States.
Okay.
And it was three of them back in the 1800s, between 66, 71, and 75.
Okay.
Only thing is with the Civil Rights Act, which some was put in effect really to enhance the life of blacks in America, that they just weren't enforced. by
right.
the letter of the law like they should have been.
Right. Well,
but
you know,
I have no problem. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go. You go. You're talking.
No, go ahead. And you know, you're talking about them. By the way, they was put in place by Republicans. You know, I've heard a lot about they're saying that there's restrictions on voting that's imposed by Republicans and so forth. But you know, from a historical content, you had restrictions on voting by Democrats back in the early ages of the last millennia that
right.
tried to prevent blacks from voting at all, or even when they did vote, prevent them from voting for Republicans.
Right.
You had organizations, groups called the Red Shirts, by the way, and I can't think of Wade Hamilton, I think, was one of the spokespersons back during that time. His name kind of escapes me. But, you know, you've had as much objections to which directions to which people, black people voted, you know, was put in force by Democrats as well as anybody else, come to mention.
Well, and
again,
as far as
the Supreme Court ruling, I agree with that. I don't think that the taxpayers or not even the business people should be required to supply contraceptions for women or men under the disguise of access to health and health-related
mm-hmm.
services.
But in terms of, you know, it's been suggested, outright said, that this is poses a challenge to Obamacare. Because, again, I want to be clear here now. If we're talking about health care, I mean, legitimate health care, medicines, operations, saving life, what have you, you know, we can argue the finer points. But whether it's Obamacare or anything else, it speaks to a societal response to realities in terms of the ability to be able to cover and manage and pay for these types of services. We speak about, you know, and again, I think what ends up happening here with this whole issue of debate about abortion, the definition of life, pro-life, pro-choice, what I see is that Obama chooses to weave into the tapestry his own pro-abortion beliefs. Now, again, I would say, if you're talking about, you know, again, I see in all fairness, let's just say a doctor determined that a woman, if she were to get pregnant again, it can cause serious harm, you know, to her safety, to her life. I would see no issue with that being covered under medical, as a medical policy. But it becomes too far-reaching, and it becomes more too clearly, I would say, agenda-driven. And given the makeup of today's cultural war, I can definitely appreciate and applaud the Hobby Lobby decision. But one other thing, though, before I see Liam's on a queue also, you know, I have a copy of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And one of the things, again, I've learned on this show, it is important, it's important as best you can, given that we're in society today where so much information is at our disposal, go online and download a number of documents that have been historic or very present. It's important that we can read for ourselves and understand what documents are saying, what is the intent, all right, what's been missed. Now, I'm looking through a copy right now, and I also have, I guess, a summary of the Civil Rights Act of 57 as well as 1866. There's some small parts about them. But I'm looking at the, I'm going to read this here, the narrative, the preamble, okay, an act to enforce the constitutional right to vote, to confer jurisdiction upon the district courts of the United States to provide injunctive relief against discrimination in public accommodations, to authorize the Attorney General in institute suits to protect constitutional rights in public facilities and public education, to extend the Commission on Civil Rights to prevent discrimination in federally assisted programs, to establish a commission on equal employment opportunity, set for other purposes. Be enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, this act may be cited as the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The main sections, Title I, Voting Rights. Title II, Injunctive Relief Against Discrimination in Places of Public Accommodation. You know, the old whites only, you know, blacks only, you know, public accommodations. Okay, Title III, Segregation of Public Facilities. Title IV, the Segregation of Public Education. And let me see, what's the other? Title V, Commission on Civil Rights. And again, just for the, you know, just for the information, this was signed by Lyndon Johnson, 1954. President Kennedy, in seeking re-election, saw this as a very contentious issue that may not pass. And it has been read upon by historians that because of the assassination of President Kennedy, there was such an emotional backlash, an emotional overpour, and the fact that Johnson was a Southerner from Texas, it gave a certain type of life and prestige and power that it was much more easily passed by the Congress, Senate, and the House of Representatives. Right, that's very important, I think. And just for another point of reference, if one may be called, they asked Malcolm, who at that time had been out of Nation of Islam, they asked Malcolm about this act, his opinion. And he took the position pretty much that it's like pulling the knife halfway out of your back, not all the way out. So just wanted to mention some of those points for reference. And I have William now. William's here on the line. I'm glad he was able to spend some time with us. I know he's a busy schedule. And so, William, assalamu alaikum, and blessed Ramadan to you.
Same to you, Kwasi, and walaikum assalam. Yeah, but I called in listening to see what you all are talking about. What are you all talking about today?
Well, we're talking about, among other topics, the recent Supreme Court decisions, including the Hobby Lobby decision. There's also the cell phone decision, you know,
What's up with the cell phone decision?
Well, apparently, police were actually confiscating cell phones.
Oh, yeah, information. I read that. Yeah.
And the Supreme Court decided that was unconstitutional. It violated, I guess, you know, what was it, Fourth Amendment, I guess? And the Obama administration, you know, I mean, you know, by accounts, the Obama administration didn't have a good week in terms of the Supreme Court decisions. And I have to ask myself, given this decision, what would happen in the event of a lawsuit against the NSA? You know, will that spell an end to wireless wiretapping? Again, police can confiscate cell phone records with a warrant. So right now we still have a policy, which debatably, you know, was, I would say, furthered by President George W. Bush, even though Alberto Gonzalez had argued that there were inklings of while I was wiretapping in the Clinton administration. Of course, you know, this was a practice with J. Edgar Hoover. And I think we should be reminded that Robert Kennedy, even though he, some will argue, was a champion of our rights, of the black people's rights, my Dr. King, he was attorney general. He authorized wiretapping of Dr. King. But laws were passed which made that illegal outside of getting a warrant. And I've been very clear that I have mixed feelings about that. I still feel strongly that in the event that there's good reason to believe that there could be a credible threat to public safety and health, life and limb, I question the wisdom.
So they've taken they've taken the power away from the foot patrolmen and left the power with the federal patrolmen.
Well, the courts. I don't know what level of, if it's a federal court that issues the warrants. I'm not sure there. But as I was saying, though, you know, I think that if you have a reason to believe they could be a real threat, I would question having to wait for a court order. What if the court denies it? At the end of the day, for me, where I stand right now, it doesn't make a difference to me whether or not I got a court order or not. I don't want to be wiretapped. Okay, so it'll be no, relief to me to hear that. Well, Quaz, they wiretapped you, but they got a warrant. It'll make a difference to me. The issue to me, why be wiretapped at all? So I think sometimes we get a little antsy and technical because, how are you going to get a warrant? Well,
yeah,
we got a warrant.
The world is getting too technical, very technical.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the nature of the beast. You take a look right now. We have this video platform using technology, internet technology. The idea that we can, for a nominal fee, reach the world is definitely a virtue of the technology that exists today. Even though we don't gamble, but I couldn't help but notice a commercial that was on this ring on TV for the past few days. That you can actually go to like a casino, online casino, and gamble. I said, man, you don't have to go fly over to Vegas or Atlantic City or Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun anymore. Oh, boy, which I obviously would say is a bad application of technology. But, when I get a chance to get a sense of how things are spun today, I suppose on both sides of the aisle, the political aisle, and I have to say on a religious aisle, you can even look no further than this sad situation in Iraq. You're having, this Sunni versus Shia, festering conflict. And I heard Imam Ramadan make the point 2 weeks ago that, they're Muslim. And this politicalization is, I'm calling it fitna, confusion. I'm saying that whoever is the aggressor in this regard will pay a grievous penalty. So, we never know what the origin of these groups are in contemporary times, where they're coming from, who's financing them. It's a lot of mess, a whole lot of mess, that we see in this world. We hear reports that this group known as ISIS, and I'm really surprised that none of the Egyptologists have waited on that name, ISIS. I was certain it was talking about that one, the word, very acronym ISIS, Maybe they have, but I haven't come across anyone, you know, trying to kind of...
Yeah, I heard somebody mention that about ISIS, you know,
okay.
the Egyptian name of ISIS. I did hear somebody
okay.
mention that. But,
okay.
you know,
yeah.
You know, this army that's you know, they're well-equipped. Somebody's financing them. You know, there's some there's pretty good oil money that's actually going along. But what I did find interesting, they said that they took over some bank, and the bank had, you know, something like $20 million or $40 million, and now they were the richest terror group that was out there. Oh, man, I'm telling you. You know, anything to create some sensation, man, you know, for the American people.
Well, you know, the thing that I've always found interesting, you know, now you might remember his name from the past. Remember the man, Adnan Khashoggi? Remember that name?
Yeah.
Now, he is interesting.
What was
he also really... I'm sorry?
What was he connected to?
He was an international arms dealer. Right? And if I remember serves me correctly, he was also related to the man on his dhoti, the consort of Princess Diana. They were both killed in the car crash. The car crash claimed both of their lives. But there's a relation there. But I guess in my naivete, you know, I look at a nation that has an army. They, within their countries, they build tanks, planes, guns, flamethrowers, all levels of IEDs, all right? Whatever destructive weaponry their budget can afford. But yet it escapes me. When I hear the term international arms dealer, to what level are they dealing? Guns? Are they selling rockets? You know, so where I'm driving at. Who are the merchants that are selling these weapons to these groups? You hear about them having, heat-seeking missiles and Stinger missiles that you put on your shoulder and just,
we hear about that in the movies, but we don't really see that actually, transpire into anything real in the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but yet it's a mystery to me. What is happening here? It's a heck of a world that we're living in today. But I guess in discussing
did you see where Israel and Palestine, man, it was so funny. It was weird. It was really weird. That those young Palestinians was throwing rocks. These guys, man,
yeah.
Arms, and they're throwing rocks. I mean, that is so ridiculous, man.
Well,
but that's the that's their point of protest, and that's what they have to fight with.
Well, that in itself is another mess, and I did make some opening comments. With regards to the response of Prime Minister Netanyahu to the murder of the Israeli teenagers. There's no question in my mind it's overkill. But I do want to say also for the record that I think this, if we talk about this term teaching points, See, one thing that is clear about nations such as Israel and others, they're not followers of Martin Luther King or Gandhi. They make it very clear when they consider their interests or the security threatened, they're going to take military and swift and decisive action. They're going to do that. Yet, other nations are not necessarily all afforded that luxury, if you will. They're kind of told to, understand and, appreciate and internalize the whole bit. But again, that's not really much I want to talk about. But this voting, this Civil Rights Act. Oh, yeah, by the way, Bianchi, I'm looking here. I'm reading some of the fine print of the the Civil Rights Act. And I do see here there was a Civil Rights Act of 1960 as well. So, again, it's, I do find fascinating. But, again, I say again, it's important that in this age of information that we really be more clear and concise in regards to things. If we not did not know any better, you'd have us they'd have us believe that there was one Civil Rights Act. Now, granted, what made the 64 Act different from other acts is that this is something that, you know, television became more of a medium in 64 than it was in 1960 or 57 or 1866. So things are much more visual. Okay, you can look at the news and see President Johnson signing, you know, the bill, giving a pen to, you know, Martin Luther King, a pen to Whitney Young, a pen to Robert Kennedy, a pen to Fulbright. You know, it becomes more, much more graphic. But in reality, no,
Whitney
no,
Young.
No, he was he there? Was
Whitney
he, I thought
Young
he was there in that.
Whitney Young detested black power.
Well, that's a whole other discussion as well. And you know, we kind of gone over that in past discussions. Whitney Young, you know,
but you know,
Thurgood Marshall, for that matter. Thurgood Marshall, for that matter.
I had to get extra sleep after coming in from San Diego, participating with marching and make those turn those buses around with those immigrants coming into our blessed country.
Yeah, another issue. You know, I say something. You know, we spoke about this about a few weeks ago, but I am very, very suspicious. I'm very suspicious that, again, in an election year, okay, all of a sudden you have this mass infusion of children, okay, coming to the country, for the most part unescorted. There are a few adults here and there, but, you know, I don't have any children that have been going through the border. But if you call him, if those who got the email, I refer to them as human conduits. And I said I would explain what I mean by that, human conduit. You have the concept of human shield, whereby I'm going to say, stand behind you. You know, I'm walking out with you in front of me. Or what I'll do, if I know you may bomb a certain area, I will let you know I have some of your people in this so-and-so building. So if you bomb the building, you kill your people. So you have, or just a very familiar scenario, I have a hostage, okay, and a police around me. So I am walking with a gun to the hostage's head. And if you touch me, if you come at me, I kill the hostage. That hostage becomes my shield. So I didn't know it was quite appropriate to use the term human shield in regards to these children. I'm calling them human conduits because they are a conduit through which an agenda can be furthered. So after all, you know, you're cruel. Cruel if you turn back these children. How can you turn back these children? You mean old GOP right-wingers, you know, xenophobes. And I find it hard to believe that they have done this without outside help within this country. And suddenly, you know, because after all, I mean, if you have any type of conscience, it has to somewhat affect you. How can I turn back children?
Well, how did the buses get across the border anyway?
Well,
because Mexico does not have any, you know, Mexico is not putting any guards at the borders anyway. That's what I was wondering. Why is it that Mexico? I mean, it's just like an open, it's an open border on one side.
How do you get to come into the southern border without a visa?
Well, this is a part of the whole conversation. But remember now, if you recall, when Governor Brewer signed into law S-1070, the dealing with illegal immigration and detaining, and I guess deporting, at least detaining, illegal immigrants. What was my point? Just so it happens, it kind of like tied in. The timing was such that President Calderon of Mexico came to the United States for a state visit. You know, he got the full trappings, you know, nice dinner, the whole bit at the White House. And he was allowed to speak before the joint session of Congress to condemn a law which was created and signed into law in the United States of America. And I was appalled that Barack Obama would allow this, you know. And, of course, he made his case why immigrants leave Mexico or the United States, you know. And, you know, we, in our conversation we had a few weeks ago, one of our callers said, I hope more come. You know, I see the ethics. I see the ethos. They come here to work, you know. They're, of course, for me now.
Quasi? Well, it looks like Quasi
got that
phone.
Obama phone again.
Yeah, but when you went down to the to demonstration, was there any law enforcement or any representation on the other side that was speaking for the?
They had the other side, yeah.
Now, when I say the other side, I don't mean people from this country. I mean people from Mexico.
Well, I really didn't go over there, but I heard that I read where you did have opposition on one side of the street and opposition to it, you know, on the other, basically. But, that doesn't make any sense, really. And you got some, I've heard some black folks that's supposed to be quote-unquote liberators and all that stuff is biding for that these people should be allowed to come into the country, even though we know the ramifications of that.
Am I being heard now? Am I being heard? Can you hear me? Am I being heard?
Yeah, you sound like a filibuster.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to make sure. Was I being heard or not? Okay. Yeah, but I wanted to finish this point here. So President Calderon was allowed to trash a law that was created in the United States of America, right? But what I'm saying, one of the callers weeks ago said that he hopes to see more Mexicans come to this country. His observation is that they come here and they're orally respectful, they work hard, they have the soccer games every Saturday, and no a lot of rowdiness, drunkenness, you know, they clean the place up. But I would say with all respect, though, I don't know if it's fair to assume or presume if you were doing that the people here in New York City anyhow are illegal. I can't make that assumption. But we do know that there's an issue in Texas and California and Nevada also, the people coming here illegally. Again, let me be clear here now. Mexico has a policy, okay, regarding illegal immigration. It's just that you can't come to Mexico from the South. Now, I've mentioned to say...
You can't do what?
Americans, you cannot come to Mexico from the southern border. They have a very strict immigration policy in Mexico. They have a policy. And I'd say if I came to Mexico illegally, based on the law, I can be put in jail. I couldn't do it. So the flow goes one way. It's a one-way flow. You know, Mexicans are allowed by Mexico and the United States, not by law, but, you know, in practice, to come to the country.
Well, they have something to gain. You have the possibility of remittances being sent back, which will give you an infusion of, quote-unquote, foreign capital. So they have something to gain. Look at the billions of dollars that's already flowing back into the South in the form of foreign capital.
Right.
And to increase that would be to their benefits.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and again, you know, we're talking about a possible, at least Mexico City has 12 million people. So a lot of people, a lot of mouths to feed. And again, I've made a point with this so-called comprehensive immigration reform, which we keep hearing from Barack Obama.
I say just be honest. Just say you want amnesty. Just say you want amnesty. Stop with this fancy terminology, comprehensive immigration reform. You know? But again, the whole issue of immigration has always been, it's been a historic reality. People have immigrated, you know. Just that, nation to nation. We've had this. Some friendly, some unfriendly, some intrusive, others invasive. Part of life. Yes, world is small, as we say. It's a better mode of transportation, even though for most part, folks, because it's a border state, because it's at a border, well, come to Mexico, they walk as a rule. Of course, some cases now they come by buses, what have you. But, this is really something that, has to be dealt with. The Dominican Postals. I mean, it is suggested that to have 11, 12 million civilians be sent back would be impractical. That's one of the arguments. So I guess they say sometimes you have to look at the reality as it is and make adjustments, which I guess is something that Barack Obama and others were saying. How do you possibly get, how do you afford? You have the resources. I mean, right now, for example, let's just say you wanted to detain. Could you detain 12 million immigrants? You probably couldn't. But one thing I'll say again, though, and I'm going back to what Brother Fati said just 2 weeks ago, his observations, why he looked at them favorably. The accepted view is that such folks come here to work. They are serious. They have families. And the fact that they have a reputation does serve them well. And for those of you, if you go by, Home Depot, see their laborers there. They're there, you bring them to your house, they'll do work for you, and they do it well. Okay, so we have to recognize that, one of the challenges here, if you will, that because they have a stellar reputation as being dependable and being workers, all right, will give you a day's work for a day's pay, or PRs, whatever it is, PRs, they work for PRs pay. That becomes part of the challenge also, because if they were only these slackers, and, goof-offs and inefficient, they would not be demand to the user. And more from side, get them out of here. They're wasting any time, anyhow. But because they're looked upon, obviously cheap labor as well, of course, that's part of also cheap labor, but looked upon as workers that come to work. And, I'm going to with this, as opposed many times to our people, as opposed to. Who seem to have a different reputation. If anything, the reverse, the opposite. So I say in all of this, there's something to learn. There is something to ponder. And I'm kind of in this pondering type of mindset because this is Mother Ramadan. And one of the things that both of us who fast are doing, should be doing, is pondering. Pondering our souls, pondering ourselves, pondering the world. And the fact that we are denying ourselves from food and water, and we're focusing more on spiritual development, what have you, this affords us an opportunity to look at these things from hopefully a clearer eye than you might have looked at it in times past or before this month, before the month of Ramadan. So, in my consternation, yes, of course, you know about the problems with the drug cartel. And, this whole issue, I think, some time ago with Eric Holder and some Americans who were killed by Mexican, So, again, we're not at the same time trying to paint a picture of complete, of a Pollyannic world. But there is a sense that if they're nannies, I'd be the best nanny. and take care of your children. If they are landscapers, in fact, if I go right now to near Red Hook,
You'll be what? Quasi. Well, it sounds like you've gone again.
Well, you know, it's also my phone, my signal too. I don't want to mention my carrier for fear of being sued by them, but
Well, you gotta stop using Metro PCS, man, or a track phone, man, and get a, you know, go ahead, man, and get Verizon or somebody.
Well, I'm not using them, but yeah, it's my signal sometimes that becomes problematic. As we are now reaching the first hour, 7:28 Eastern Time, and I'm hoping to hear from other callers, those who are online. Listen to the show. You call in at 213-816-0356. We're talking about Supreme Court cases, the Voting Rights Act of 64, deliberation. That's in the conversation.
So have you already talked about the suit against Obama?
I spoke about it briefly the past 2 weeks, and I wasn't following it. I wasn't sure if Speaker Boehner actually went on with the suit, you know. But one thing I do want to say, though, and something we talked about 2 weeks ago, because the lawsuit apparently is dealing with the Obama's use of executive orders. Which, and I did speak about this in general this morning, that executive orders are a Oscar president. I guess ultimately, when there are to be able to with Obama, without any concern that he is bypassing powers and rights of the Congress. And I went through a little bit of a history, looking at presidents start with FDR, and one of the things I find interesting, I guess since that time, presidents have used that option much more or less. FDR did, like, I think, my gosh, over, let me see if I have this information here in front of me, over 1,000, I have right here. FDR, in his 13 years, 12 and a half years in office, signed 3,466 executive orders, an average of 266 per year. Truman signed 893 executive orders in 7 years in office, 127 per year. President Kennedy did 71 in 3 years. I didn't calculate Johnson's, but when I went to, I guess, Ronald Reagan, 178 years, or 46 per year. George H.W. Bush, 155, or 41.2 per year. Clinton did 63 in 8 years, 45.4. George W. Bush, 8 years, about 36 per year. And Obama, the president, 174 by 32. So, in terms of the number of executive orders, Obama really is not so far out of the recent trend. Maybe he's done less. I mean, I can hardly think of if I give any kind of legitimacy to Speaker Boehner, John Boehner's argument, perhaps the utter nature of the executive orders. It can't be the number. It can't be the number. Because he's done less.
Well, in his statement, the union speech, he said that he was going to utilize his power to do whatever he could to push the agenda forward to try to do something for people, you know, because he couldn't do anything as far as Congress was concerned. Do you think that was the right move?
Well, you know, again, you know, before you came on the air, I was speaking about a YouTube clip I'd seen yesterday interviewing President Kennedy. And he spoke about the challenges with Congress. And one thing he said that I found kind of interesting, he said that the very insignificant proposals or bills have little opposition. They pass pretty much, flying colors, pretty much a vast majority decision, a vote, President signs it, move on. But those particular bills that are very significant have far-reaching implications, right, are more contentious, unless you have this back and forth with the Congress and the President. You know, and I've said oftentimes that this is to be expected. And what I've heard it said, that somehow this President, the Congress has opposed Obama at every turn. That's not true. That's not true at all. I think
that is true.
No, it's not true. Well, again, this is Ramadan, so I'm not going to get into a whole debate and discussion on this one. I'm not going to do that. I'm just saying you check the record. Check the record, and you find that he's got what he wants to get passed. Right? It's just that, again, I remember it being said, Mitch McConnell, when Obama first became president, said he wants to make Obama first-term president. It's not true. He said it's 2010 after the Republicans took the House. And I also remind that any president who assumes office, it is the goal of the opposition to make that president a one-term president. So it's nothing new with Obama. And I'm saying that George W. Bush complained bitterly how the Congress opposed him on issues. You know, for example, we even look at his pick for Supreme Court nominee, Supreme Court, Harriet Myers, was opposed, and eventually she withdrew. Obama's, both of his went through flying colors. Sotomayor and Kagan. So, again, I take issue with that point. It's not true. Not at every time. And again, to the extent that his determination or deciding his executive order is legitimate, I have to say it depends on the bill or the circumstance. And again, I make it very clear. I'm saying if you look at the more recent trend of executive orders, Obama is not out of the ordinary. If anything, he's been more reserved when it comes to executive orders, okay? But again, I think part of the problem also with Obama is a certain premise that has been projected by his supporters. Again, this view that at every turn he's opposed, okay? So therefore, I took him to dinner, I took him to lunch, played golf, as if that's supposed to change the mind and positions of those who he treated. I don't understand this. How taking me to dinner is going to change my mind if I have a certain view? So because I am not getting my way, I'm going to use executive actions, executive orders. Again, I'm saying again, unless Speaker Boehner is speaking to the particulars as far as executive orders that he has taken, he has signed. He's hard pressed to make the case that he can't make the case that it's too many executive orders. Because I've read the facts. He's made less. I mean, we'll see what happens over the next year or so. But right now, he's on pace to have signed less executive orders than his predecessor. So, again, I say the ball is in his hands.
I find that there's a lot of grandstanding with Congress, that many of the congressmen get in front of the news cameras and start to talk about the decisions that the president is making, as opposed to as if they were the president. They're not the president. They were elected to be Congress people. So I thought their responsibility was to do things to get things done for their state so that they could take it back to the people of their state. But it seems like they do a lot of grandstanding in front of the cameras on disagreeing with the president and going against the president and saying, no, the president shouldn't do this. This is what he should do. On issues that is clearly executive decisions and not congressional decisions.
Well, I would think you need to be more specific when you say issues. And what issue are you talking about in particular? Because, again, as I said to you before, two things are going on here. We have the, okay, you and I and Pianki, we're younger, Pianki and William, okay? You had ABC, NBC, CBS. Okay, you had your local TV, your local affiliates, okay? Now you have CNN, C-SPAN, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox. Have so many, you have more major, you have more news outlets, okay? And every day they have someone at the White House or at the Congress, you know, interviewing a member of Congress.
Am I listening to butterflies? Sound like butterflies to me. I got some butterflies here. Woo, woo, butterflies. Butterflies. Must be Quasi's track phone. The track phone that Quasi's using.
No, it's my carrier. But anyhow, I'll repeat. If it came in clear, I'll repeat what I was saying. We had many more news outlets today than we had 50 years ago. 40 years ago, 30 years ago. So that's, I think, part of the beast. You have more news outlets. But again, I say again, it was no difference. I think what happens with the people, they have short memories, you know, short memories. Bush was intensely criticized by members of Congress, by Nancy Pelosi, by Ted Kennedy.
Yeah. Well,
like Chuck
for good
Schumer.
Reason, though. I mean,
no, but
I mean,
wait,
this
wait,
man
no,
is...
But wait, but see, but William. See, that becomes a subjective position. I'm saying to you, if you said earlier, again, I have to make sure that I'm keeping myself very, very, you know, I have to back up because it's Ramadan. So let me be much more reserved in my comments. You said earlier that it is the job of the Congress to deal with their states and deal with those issues, as opposed to going on television talking about with its view of the president. So I'm looking at that as a general view, an objective, organic view.
I agree.
So it shouldn't matter whether or not you feel they're justified or not. But if your premise is they should not...
So you mean... So let me just understand you. So you're saying that it's okay for a president to come before me and to lie, to make up decisions and to make decisions that are false and I'm supposed to, you know, just go ahead and say, oh, he's got the executive right to do that.
But you're missing, and I think you're missing the point. I'm basing it on your premise. Your premise was it is the job of the Congress to focus on their states. So whether or not the president, on that point there, whether or not the president is lying, telling the truth, you like him or dislike him, if you're consistent, you would hold the same standard for whoever. Now, that's one point. Next point.
But I think you're mixing that up.
No, I'm not. Not at all. I'm saying to you, you made the statement that, in essence, this Congress here, because it's really going stepping beyond the bounds. Instead of focusing on their jobs as congressmen, they're going on television. I'm saying to you that if you're consistent in your thinking, you'll be just as critical of the previous Congressman Bush as president.
Well,
I
wouldn't agree with that premise that you're coming with. I wouldn't agree with that. When you start to this Congress has spoken about President Obama, has called him totally out of his name, called him a king, and they have said, well, you know, we need to bomb, we need to go over to Iraq, we need to bomb, we should have never came out of there, we should have did this and that. That's what he should do. The previous administration made a decision to go into Iraq on a false premise. Can you hear me, Kwasi? Kwasi, can you hear me? Because I'm getting butterflies here. Kwasi.
I hear you.
You have a... You finally came back.
How's it now? Is it any better now? Is it better now?
Yeah, it's better now, man. Oh, boy.
I hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm getting butterflies and everything, man, coming through, man.
Well,
it's just, and then when I say Kwasi, you don't respond.
Well, no. I'm responding. But hold on. Do you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm just home, man. I'll have to continue the conversation when I get upstairs.
Well, let me. I'm gonna have to hang up and call back. Let me try that. I'll hang up and call back and see what happens. So, Bianchi, stay in line. Bianchi, stay in line.
Where you go, Kwasi? You still there, William? Oh, I tell you too.
Okay, I'm back on. Do you hear me, Bianchi? Bianchi, do you hear me? Oh, he just dropped. Oh, please call back. It was a problem system there. Please call back. Yeah, I hope that they both call back, William and Bianchi. Oh, the audience. Oh, okay, he's back. Good. Yeah, Bianchi? You hear me?
Yeah, man. What's wrong with your communication? You got drones? Pinpointing you or what?
Who knows? Well, I hope that William Bush called.
Where's Britt Ahmed at?
Well, I know. I don't know. He's been busy. I haven't heard from Ahmed in a while.
Probably out shooting fireworks.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But I did want to respond to William's. But again, I think what he said is exactly what I'm talking about for a long time. That you know, people who support Obama are not objective. And they don't recognize that largely their position is based on emotion and not really appreciating history, not appreciating how things work in Washington, D.C. You know, and somehow Obama is to receive special treatment. And again, this is much, much, much ties into the view of the man being almost a divine man. So therefore, he's not subject to rebuke. He's really not not fallible. So I still say it ties much to that perception. So it's not acknowledged, you know, by said persons. I think that the companies we've had in the past support this position. But I'm hoping again. I hope that William does call back. I don't want to have to repeat myself, you know. But you know, but I want to, what I'm going to do here right now is read some of these articles, I guess, their opinions, all right? I guess there's some things that shock me, some of the opinions that shock me. But I'll start with this, I guess, political. This is June 30th. I thought this was in July. I guess not. June. Yeah, right. SCOTUS decision ignites Obamacare contraception fight. So much for the Obamacare comeback. When the health care laws seem to be in a better place with a big finish to the enrollment season and the early embarrassments fading to the background, the Supreme Court handed Obamacare's opponents the biggest legal victory yet. The contraception coverage mandate isn't central to the law, the way the individual mandate is, by letting some closely held employers, like family-owned businesses, opt out of the coverage if they have religious objections. The justices haven't blown a hole in the law that unravels its ability to cover millions of Americans. They didn't even overturn the contraception coverage rule itself. They just carved out an exemption for some employers for one benefit, one that wasn't even spelled out when the law was passed. So politically, that doesn't matter. What matters is that the Supreme Court has ruled that the Obama administration overreached on one of the most sensitive cultural controversies in modern politics. And in doing so, the justices have given the Affordable Care Act one more setback that it didn't need heading into the midterm elections. This will remind people why they didn't like the ACA to begin with, the Republican pollster Kellyanne Conway. People do not believe that a president, no matter what party they're from, should be overbearing or intrusive into their religious practices. Republican ad maker Brad Todd put it bluntly, anytime Obamacare is in the news, it's a good thing for the Republicans. Ruling also allows Republicans to say that Obamacare and his law have violated one of the most respected constitutional protections, freedom of religion. They've overreached, and they're overreached in an area that's very sacred, said Marjorie, non-president of the Susan B. Anthony list. That's interesting. I got a call here, 0261. Call
yeah,
0261.
Like a, I'm in the house.
Good, okay, good. Yes, I did want to respond to your statement. So let me finish reading. I was reading this article, an article regarding the Hobby Lobby decision. The court's decision isn't risky to them for Republicans. Democrats and abortion rights supporters have are ready to pounce on it if it looks like Republicans are celebrating too loudly. They say this is fundamentally a fight about allowing women to control their own destinies and their own bodies, not about employers' religious beliefs. And they can point to polls that show a majority of Americans support the contraception coverage. It reinforces overall perceptions of the right as hostile to women, said Democratic pollster Anna Greenberg. Even though it's on the court and not the Congress, it's still seen as part of the broader narrative of the war on women. Oh, I love that term, war on women. Somehow, if you look at life, life, and by the way, people forget that baby aborted, I'm looking at using abortion for a minute, could be a female. Could be a female. And I'm reminded from Holy Quran, dealing with a much more direct case of infanticide, you know, infanticide of girls. God asked in the Quran, for what crime was she killed? Okay, was she killed? War woman? Nah. War on insanity. What is this? But I wanted to address your points that you brought up, William, in terms of the reaction to a president by the Congress. You know, in terms of the previous administration, we speak about the war in Iraq, all right? I'm presuming in terms of being based on a false premise. Well, the intelligence reports did state that Saddam Hussein did have chemical weapons of mass destruction. We know that this was the case because he used them against Iran and the war against Iran and against the Kurds. The point of contention is whether or not he complied with the UN and destroyed them all. That's the point of contention. And according to Hans Blix, he says, I think he would argue on the side of, Democrats that this has been taken care of. His obligation. We also know, however, that when Clinton was president, when Saddam Hussein had barred UN inspectors from coming into the country, Clinton bombed Iraq. It wasn't an invasion, but it was still a bombing of the country. But I think what is often overlooked in this, we speak about this false premise, which very well be the case.
Which did what?
It could very well be the case, a false premise, by which they used to invade Iraq. Remember that.
And you was okay with that? You think that was his job to do that?
Well, hold on. See, you're putting words in my mouth.
No, I asked you a question. I said, are you okay with that?
No.
I didn't put anything in your mouth. I asked you a question.
If it is based on a false premise, it is incorrect. But understand something now. When Bush could not have declared war on Iraq without the Congress, and it is a fact that John Kerry, Joe Lieberman, Chuck Schumer, Ted Kennedy, Hillary Clinton, as well as Republicans, voted for the war. They did not seem to consider this to be a war based on a false premise or a lie. So we speak about the Congress. This is a case where he did it in concert with Congress. And if you go on the history, wars that this country has been involved in, I would say, have always been, I guess, controversial in terms of the premise to which this country sent troops. We can go to the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. Supposedly, North Vietnamese attacked the Tonkin Gulf in 1955, and therefore President Johnson saw it as an opportunity to escalate the conflict in Vietnam. Mind you now, Vietnam is not a declared war. It was a conflict in which 500,000 troops were sent.
Well, I don't think that's what we were talking about.
No. See, I think, William, what I think you tend to miss, you tend to miss concepts and essential point of principle. I'm saying
really?
To you that, yeah, I say you do, sure. And I
So now you're telling me that I don't think clearly now. I'm missing concepts.
I'm saying you're missing it here. You're missing it here. I'm saying that. I
don't think so.
Let me say, Quasi.
I don't think I'm missing that concept. I think that we were talking about the executive office and the right of the executive office to make a decision. I think that's what we were talking about.
No, but
right? Let me finish the point. The point was this: the executive office and the executive office office's right to make a decision. Now, Bush made a decision, an executive decision, and he brought it.
It wasn't.
Executive. Yeah, he made an executive decision to go to war.
It was not. It's not true. Not true at all. He got Congress to allow him to declare war.
Let me say this again. He made the decision, and he brought it to Congress. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
He made an
executive decision, and he brought it to Congress. And you are right, as you said, that Kerry, Clinton, and other Democrats and all the Republicans voted for it. You are right about that, 100%.
Yeah.
So So, I mean, okay. I don't have any problem with you with that. My problem with you, and I think where you're not being clear, is that I'm saying to you that President Obama is making executive decisions.
Okay,
and,
let me ask you.
And when he's making executive decisions, now he's being sued for it by Congress, and he has other congressmen grandstanding about, you know, him being king because he's making executive decisions.
Well, again, I think what you're not understanding, William, is that, again, when you look at the war in Iraq, it is not an executive order. An executive decision or an executive position, because it happens to come from the executive branch of government, is not an executive order. The issue in hand are
I think
you're executive.
Aren't you splicing words now?
No, I'm not.
I mean, it is the president's responsibility. The president is the one that takes us to war. He makes the decision, and then he brings it to Congress, right? Are you making a difference? Let me just be clear. Are you making a difference between words, executive order, and executive decision? I just want to be clear about that.
Yes, I am. I am. Because
I'm meaning it the same way.
Well, it's not. It's not. At the end of the day.
You're making it. That's because you're splicing words. The thing is that you are. You
William.
Are splicing.
William, hear me out, please. Hear me out, please.
Okay.
If the Congress of the United States had told Bush, you cannot send troops to Iraq, you cannot invade Iraq, if they told him that, he would be sending troops in violation of that. Okay? It is not, there's no executive order that often allows a president to declare war. If anything, what Lyndon Johnson did, and Truman in Korea were probably more along the lines of an executive order, if almost signed, because this is a case where a president without Congress sent troops to fight a war. Okay? So I'm saying to you, in the case of Obama, again, I don't know if I was properly articulating this. I don't know if I was probably articulating this point. And I see the call coming. I'm going to get to the call in a minute. Boy, this pop-ups are killing me. The issue, again, are Obama's executive orders. And I've said it more than once, that we need to know, ultimately, is Boehner speaking to the number of executive orders or the extent of them, the character of them. If he speaks about the number, I'm saying to you that he's somewhat out of order because Obama has really done less at this point. He's signed less, a small number of executive orders than his predecessors have. So it's not out of the ordinary what he's done. However, if he's speaking about particular executive orders that the Speaker feels overreaching his powers and authority as president, then he may have a case. Without knowing what's in the lawsuit, what it contains, I can't really definitively say Boehner is right or wrong. Okay, because again, when I did the research 2 weeks ago, and I read out to the audience the number of executive orders signed by presidents since Herbert Hoover. All right? Presidents back then signed many more executive orders. And anything has gone down. The number of executive orders signed by presidents have gone down. Okay? So I'm making that point clear. But again, I say again, when you look at this perception that somehow they're picking on Obama and they pull them at any turn. You know, this thing about legal immigration, first of all, Obama signed an executive order, I assume so, when he allowed illegal immigrants, I think who were teenagers, to stay in this country. That's executive order, okay? Which I disagree with, okay?
You sign one with the minimum wage, which could be debated as whether or not that is something the president can do, right, in bypassing Congress. I thought that minimum wage issues, so that the Congress had to sign on to with the president's pen. So, you know, again, I'm looking at more of the nature of his executive orders that perhaps they're dealing with rather than a number. So, again, the majority of Obama supporters have no sense of history, have no sense of the Trump administration. Forget Kennedy. There's no concern about the trends in history.
Let me tell you what I don't need to know. I don't need to know the trend of history. What I need to know, okay, because I think that sometimes the trend of history is a cop-out. Why? Because we live in the present, okay, and the president, a president, has to go for the now and the future, not the past, the now and the future. That's what we put him in office for. I need to know what the laws, what the rules and regulations are as far as what it is he can do and what he can't do. All right?
Once
he
again,
is the executive. Then we have the Congress,
again,
and then we have the legislator. That is what we have. That is what I need to understand.
Hello? Hung up on me. Well, I got 8340. Filipati, 8340. Assalamu alaikum. Brother Fati, you there? 8340? 8340, last four numbers. 8340. 8340. Am I being... My signal is weak, so that could be my problem. Maybe not hearing me. Okay, 8340. You hear me now? Got some more bars up here, so you may hear me. 8340. Okay. Are you back, William?
I don't know. I must have pressed the wrong button. It must be Ramadan or something. The angel must have said.
Let me get this.
I was saying to you that I don't necessarily have to know the past history of the presidents. I need to know the present president and what the president's responsibility is.
I'll tell you why I need to know, and I think why you need to know.
I know you need to know, but
I'll tell you why you need to know, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, okay, you go ahead then.
Because the way it is, Barack Obama is told the first black president. So, this is first in history, okay? First time, the black president. And he, therefore, is being looked upon in many instances through a racial lens, pro or con. To those who like him because he's black, and that's it, don't need to know. Those who like him because he's black, okay, don't need to know. So race becomes a very important part in the discussion.
Why?
Of Barack Obama.
Why?
Because he's a black president. Because of the perception.
About him being the American president?
William, can I finish, please?
No, I was trying to finish. I'm asking you a question because
I
know that you want to make your point, but, you know, I asked you a question.
So, William,
why
I can't make it if you keep on interjecting questions, William. Let me finish. I'll ask that question and then finish this point. I'll ask that question. Let me finish, please. So what ends up happening when the Obama supporters complain about his treatment or his perceived treatment, and in fact, members of Congress, including Pelosi, have said, well, Bush never had looked at this type of problems. So when people say Obama is going through all these changes, they're saying within the context. They're saying compared to other presidents, the past, compared to Bush, the past, he gets a raw deal. He gets it harder. He gets it rougher. He gets opposed. Okay? Compared to other
Wait, hold on. I don't think that's your opinion. That's your opinion.
Let me continue.
That's your opinion. Get that straight.
What I,
that's opinion.
What I do, in setting the record straight, I remind people what happened in the previous administration, the name calling on Bush, the movies about Bush, the movie about Bush, okay?
You bring Bush.
Wait.
Yes, I do.
I bring in another Democrat, President Kennedy, who, by all rights, had a very difficult time with Congress, who was also, quote unquote, opposed to every turn. Who one of the issues today, what we're talking about today, the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
What does that have to do with President Obama and today?
You don't understand. You just don't understand. You just don't get it. You just don't get it.
Let me tell you what I get, because, see, you go to the history point. This is what I go to. I go to, and I think I just told you that, and I don't see why this doesn't make sense to you. I'm not looking at President Obama as the black president. I'm looking at President Obama as the president, and I've told you this as an Obama supporter many times. I've told you this, that President Obama is the president for all the people. I don't call him a black president or what. He is the president, and he has the office, and he's supposed to fulfill function of the executive branch. That's what he's supposed to do. And I expect my Congress people to fulfill their responsibility in the congressional branch, the legislative branch, the same thing. Now, when it starts to get political and other things start to come up in there, then that's where I have the problem. I have the problem because the office is not running effectively. That's where I have the problem. I have a problem when others are overstepping their bounds and trying to stop the executive branch from doing their job, or trying to stop the Senate from doing their job, or the congressmen stop each other from doing their job. I don't need history. I need to know what your function is, and I need you to do it. I don't need all that stuff that you're talking about. And the reason why it's not working because people are overstepping their bounds.
Okay, William, can you provide some examples of where particulars and issues where you see Congress is overstepping its bounds with respect to Obama? Give examples, please.
Well, let me tell you this here. My problem is that Congress is not passing laws and laws right now. That's my big problem with Congress.
What law has been proposed that you feel should be passed and not passing? Give me an example, please. Give us an example.
Okay, about the immigration law.
The immigration law
is not passing because Congress only has how many days? 15 days, in the next 6 months or something like that to be in office, and they're not going to have enough time to get anything done because they're at a standstill as far as coming up and making votes to actually get some things done. That's one. The other part is when the decision was made as far as the health care rules and regulation was concerned, win or lose, it's a done deal. However, they have taken their time and spent a whole lot of energy, trying to repeal Obamacare. I have a big problem with that because there are many other issues that need to be taken care of by Congress, and they're wasting time on this Obamacare thing by trying to pass rules and laws to get it repealed. I think that's just a waste of time. Can't get together. They haven't been able to pass anything off, with the executive branch. They haven't been able to communicate. And Obama said in his speech that he was going to go ahead and use his executive power to get some things done for the American people. So, that's
things,
where
things
that's
such as
the,
what? Think, Things such as what? Give me an example.
Give you an example of what?
Okay. Things for the American people, such as?
Give you an example of what?
You said that Obama in his last speech, like a State of the Union address, said he's going to go to executive orders to get things done for American people, such as?
Well, one of the things that he did, the Brothers Keeper piece that he's doing as far as, you know, like African-American men, he doesn't I'm not going to stop. You asked me a question. Didn't you ask me a question? Brothers Keeper one of the things that he's doing?
No.
Didn't he put something to raise the minimum wage? Didn't he put that
in place for federal
work? Didn't he put that in place? Asking you.
Yes.
Okay, so these are some of the things that he was able to do without going through Congress.
Brothers Keeper is a program that he is going to focus on when he leaves office. It's not a government program. Okay.
He introduced it himself. He didn't have to go through Congress in order to get it done. That's what he said.
There's no contention whatsoever if he wants to set up a program for black male. All right?
Okay.
Which
he can do that. Why?
Anyone can do that.
Uses executive power to do that.
Executive power? No.
Yes.
Well, again, okay, for the sake of time, and it is Ramadan, you did provide two examples, okay? The immigration bill, it's probably a valid point to a degree as to why it's not put up for a vote. One would think that there would be enough votes in the House to repeal any so-called comprehensive immigration reform. And perhaps this is the case where the Congress is, or the House, recognizes that it could become a nasty House fight and be used against the GOP in the 14th election. So that's quite possible. But again, you know, let me make something clear.
Start talking about it's got something to do with the 2016 race, and you know that's a possibility
race.
Why they don't want to pass it. That's not their responsibility. Listen, your responsibility is to get in there and get and vote up or down as far as the bill is concerned. Attached to 2016? Why is it attached to that?
I could 2014. We have to 2014. I think 2016. 2014. This year. Okay? I said to you again that when Bush tried to get another judicial appointment, they were blocked also by the Senate. They were blocked also. And he said the same thing that Obama's saying about the immigration. William, I'm saying to you that things are no different. And what you're failing to see,
because they did it in Bush's era, because they did it in Lyndon Johnson's era, doesn't mean that the mechanics of the Congress and the mechanics of the executive branch are working properly.
What you're missing, William, is that this is the nature of oppositional politics. If you have Can I finish, please? Have a president who is a Democrat and either a House or Senate that is Republican, or vice versa, you're going to have, by nature of the party philosophy, disagreements, and therefore come to impasse. But it's to be expected. And that's something, again, when you had to hang up, I made the point, and I'm saying it now, there's still the air and aura of infallibility over Obama, that he can't be wrong. And therefore, since he can't be wrong, anyone who opposes him is automatically wrong.
I don't know where you get that from. President Obama, a college graduate, the man has an impeccable resume, so he's not a stupid man, and I'm sure that, and he has a lot of smart people around him to help him make decisions, so I'm sure when he makes a presentation, he doesn't make a presentation that is, he tries not to make a presentation that is flawed. I think that he tries to make a presentation that has some accuracies in there and makes sense. So, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, so then when you talk about, you know, he doesn't want to be wrong, what do you mean by that?
No, I didn't say that. I said that the people who support him might see him as ever wrong. They see him as infallible. That's what I say.
Well, no, I don't see him as – you know what I see him as? I see him as a practical man. I don't see him as infallible. I see him as a practical person, and I think
William,
some of the things
– William,
puts on the,
William.
Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah, I guess
because you're cutting
me
off.
Man.
Know that, right? And this is Ramadan. This is Ramadan, and
yes, I know it.
All right, so can I finish my point?
I'm talking about myself
and
you as well.
And William. Go ahead, Kwame.
You finish. William. Here I go. You know, we've had discussions about Obama on some of his other views. And when I talk about some of his positions, especially the Holy Quran, you try to defend the position anyhow.
What does the Quran have to do with the politics of President Obama? A presentation. What does that have to do with President? What you're doing is you're changing the subject. Come on, Kwasi. Come on, man.
I'm making the point, William, that in my position, in my argument, that Muslims see Obama as infallible. Okay? When I make certain parallels to Obama's positions with the Holy Quran, they, as a rule, don't want to say Obama is wrong or in error. And as such, I take the position, I make the hypothesis that they therefore see Obama as infallible. That's simple.
Can I make a recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend you stop talking now. Okay? Because, you know, like we were talking about the executive branch and we were talking about the legislative branch and the other branch of government, which is the what's the other branch?
The judicial.
Yes, thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of a sudden now you've gone to the Quran, and denigrating Muslims and bringing the Quran. That's a problem.
Why is it that we're talking about?
Why do we bring in the religious book of the Muslim into the picture and the Muslim's position about the president? I mean, I'm an American citizen. You know, forget the fact that I'm a Muslim. I'm just trying to make a presentation to you of what I expect. You know, what an American citizen would expect an American president to do and what an American Congress could do. And so that's the presentation. So I don't know why.
No, not at all. That's not true. No, I think again the point you're missing, and you simply missed the point. And again, you know, again when an intellectual, an academic, stands in front to Obama, such looking at history, to make a point about how things work, it's dismissed. Because it requires thinking. It requires an acknowledgement that, well, maybe, you know, he's not so picked on as anybody else has been. Because, again, there's still this air that exists of infallibility with respect to Obama. So, again, I make the point, when I hear this nonsense about he's opposed to every term, he's opposed.
He's opposed at every turn. Well, listen, I'm just talking about, wait a minute, but see, I mean, now you're mixing it up again. because
really,
if, yeah. Well, because you're talking about that you know, he's people say he's infallible. He's opposed at every turn.
No, they don't say it. It's the way he's received is implied, because he can't be considered wrong. The fact that you would say ask me,
you heard before you went on. You said because he can't be considered wrong. I don't know. That's so. It sounds so childish.
Well, it is a pretty accurate, close to accurate perception. Because again, when Muslim, is he wrong on certain issues? Which we
it's childish. That's a childish. That's a childish statement, man. You know, he can't be wrong. That sounds real girly, like he can't be wrong. You know, I'm not calling you girly. I'm not saying that you're girly or anything like that. I'm just saying that for somebody to think like that is, you know, absolute and ignorant. It's a very ignorant position.
Well,
and
I would agree with you. But however, this is what happened.
Because that's a very ignorant position.
I'm shocked that a Muslim would ask me, when I think of the Holy Quran, about Obama. What is going to happen?
The thing is that President Obama is a politician, and the Quran and Muslims have to do with religion.
That's deep. Because we understand that religion encompasses all areas of life. And we look at these areas through religious lens.
It's our personal way of life.
I'm blown away.
It's a personal. I mean, being a Muslim is personal. It's a personal way of living.
It's 8:24 a.m.
Oh, it's 8:24. Okay.
The other callers have been rather silent recently. Bianchi's been patiently, and I guess it's Fati has not said anything. I'm hoping he says something. I hope he hears me, because I know I've had some problems with reception and with my phone service. So, The debates, I guess, and differences will continue. And I can say, you know, myself, one of my frustrations in dealing with this show is dealing with that point. That, you know, I heard in mass Muslims defending Obama using the Quran, using the religion, you know, using Islamic terminology. Okay? And suddenly when it's time to take him to task on those same standards, I'm hearing something that, why are we even discussing religion? It was discussed ad nauseum in 08, 09. I heard a brother make a statement that when Obama addressed Congress, it was like the angels were bowing to Adam. That's a very religious, that's an Islamic statement. That's a religious statement.
I said that. And I also said that the angels bowed to Steve Jobs, Henry Ford, and many others.
No, but the difference is, this was, you know, a particular instance when he gave a speech. He gave a speech, and it was another brother that made the statement. When he made a speech, not the overall process of becoming a president with this president, that it was the angels bowing to Adam. But again, it was okay to use religion then. But somehow...
And now we can talk about him being a black president, that it was, for him to be the first black president, that was the angels bowing, all right? Because the forces worked in his favor that made him the first black president. Okay. The forces bowed to Henry Ford. The forces bowed to Edison. There are many, and they didn't have to be religious people in order for the forces to bow to them. When something unique and something unique comes out of it, and that's basically what it means when it says the angels bowed. That's what it means.
That's a matter.
Yes, that's what it means.
I would say,
if you can
not necessarily.
Necessarily.
Well,
that's
again, that's an opinion you have. That's an opinion. And,
well, that's not a fact.
It's an opinion. If you want to apply it to that level, it's an opinion. Not a fact, for sure.
What do you think an angel's bow means?
I think the angel's bow, if I go to the Quran in that particular scenario where you have the angels and Adam and Iblis, what I see is that those force, those entities, act only, cannot be disobedient, have no free will, okay? We're under the command of the first man, the first consciousness, the first thinking man, okay? That being Adam, okay? And of course, it can be applied to other, representations of humanity and what human beings have done. But again, what's interesting?
Well, see,
is
that's where you're wrong. See, right there, Well, you are.
I can tell you how. Please tell me.
Well, the thing is that when that whole thing took place, it didn't take place with. It took place in paradise. It didn't take place on Earth.
But that has nothing to do with what I'm saying, though. It's still the issue of the force.
So he wasn't a man.
That's not the main point. Well, see, but Adam is thinking man, okay? And however we looked at symbology, wherever he was, that's immaterial in this discussion. You looked at the sense of it. But again, I'm saying to you again is this, that it seems to me that it was fine to use religiosity when it was favorable, if you keep in mind any favor, Obama. When I mentioned, for example, Obama's saying that a man can marry another man, a woman can marry another woman, then suddenly I can't mention religion anymore. Also, I can't mention Quran anymore. But I can mention it before then. Well, and I'm saying this is very serious, and it should not be taken lightly. But it is time to go. And one thing you have reminded me in times past, brother, that when it's 8:30, I got to wrap it up. You can't just go on and on and on and on and on.
Always a pleasure with you, Kwasi.
Yeah. So I'm going to, same likewise, I'm going to just move on and thank you all for your patience, because I think that I could have directed the conversation in a different way towards the end, and I have to assume responsibility for that, because I'm the host of the show. But I do at the same time recognize that these are points that have to be made. And I'm going to say again that if you want to understand things going on in the present, you need to understand past trends. Not to be stuck in them, but to understand that many times what you see in history is a reflection of human behavior, human nature, and it's to be expected. And not necessarily bad. But remember now, in the branches of government, they all are there to check each other. The president is checked by the Congress, right? I would say overall process is monitored by the judicial branch. The disagreements. There are presidents who have regretted certain Supreme Court appointees. As how to deal with Earl Warren. Regret it, appointing him. That's how it is. And I'm saying again, in closing, that to the extent that you process these things from the past, all right, you understand why it is invalid. It is infantile to suggest that somehow Obama is being treated any differently. Any other president is. Presidents are called names all the time. They're opposed all the time. They are challenged by Congress on television video all the time. Obama no different. And I think you understand that,
will be consistent in the decision, as I see it, where you see Obama as infallible. So thank you all again, and God peace upon you. Bless Ramadan to all. Assalamu alaikum.